Now, I'm talking only about this one thing. The people with the lower level of expectation were sometimes extremely good in let's say, in their fields or in other administrative aspects. But there's one thing that, in order to build, you must have this kind of thing. And that was very striking to me.
Who else beside Alec do you think had that vision?
I think, let's see. I'm sure to leave out people because I don't know. One that I remember was Harry Kalish. That is not to the extent that Alec did. And Harry actually, and I'm a little joking about this, took lessons from Alec.
Oh.
Harry would actually come over to discuss and learn when Harry began to be chairman of the department. He went to Alec for ideas.
Was he chairman back in Oyster Bay?
I don't think there was a department in Oyster Bay.
No, he had his pigeons in Crow Hall.
Yes, right. No, I think my vague memory is that there were rudimentary departments in the science and mathematics division. The division, in other words, was the basic units here. But there was anticipation of a breakup, and there were separate subunits already, which were called departments, but had to go through the division somehow. And my feeling is that the other divisions did not have departments. However, they certainly existed when we came to Oyster Bay. So I think, in fact, Harry may have been the only person in psych at the time, or maybe one other. At Oyster Bay, I mean. And the building started after he came. Well, certainly Francis Bonner. You see, I'm tending to name the people in the areas that I know the most about, because I just don't know the others well enough. And Leonard did, although he, you know, his period as chairman was so short that and the department was so small that he didn't have a chance to implement that. Now, in other areas, I suspect that
Dick Levine.
I didn't know him well, I have to say. I just don't know.
Right.
I mean, I knew him personally. Oh, wait a minute, Dick Levine. There were two. One is Dick Levin and one is Levine.
Well, I don't know, but anyway, the
one
who was chairman of the English...
I didn't know him at all, except to say hello to him. We knew each other, but that's all. Dick Levin, I thought you meant, but he wasn't ever an administrator. And in any case, I just don't know that side of him well enough. Sidney Gelber, probably, and I say probably because I just didn't, wasn't involved with him as much.
Certainly in the arts.
Oh,
I think Sidney had a...
Oh, yeah, that's right. In fact, that sort of confirms what I said. By the way, I have a colleague in Israel. He visits me and I visit him, that is, we collaborate. And I was there one day when I heard this was at the Desert Research Institute, which is in the middle of the desert, but about 30 miles from its parent institution, which is the Ben-Gurion University in Beersheba. I don't know if you know that Sidney's on the board of governors there. They're very active.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's on the board of governors. Frank Young was for a while, but I think he probably gave it up. And Sidney has been worked very hard to raise standards there, and so they gave him an honorary degree. And I came. He didn't know I was there. It was kind of a surprise to him to see my face in the audience.
Well,
anyway. Let's see, what else do we have in that question?
Do you have any relations with the discipline, within the discipline of physics?
Let me finish the Albany connection.
All right.
After I was no longer dean, I was a member of a number of statewide committees. I was a senator for a while, and as such a member or chairman of some of the subcommittees. I was also... I was chairman of the graduate committee and a member of one or two others. I was also a member of, I've forgotten the name of it, but what was then the faculty advisory board of the Research Foundation. Whatever board it is that contains faculty representatives.
Do you have any conception of the functions of that research foundation, and its relation to, let's say, the four university centers, the extent to which it siphoned off funds from our administrative, I forgot the term. My memory is...
Siphoned off overhead funds.
Overhead, yes, yeah. That's what I mean.
Well, it's changed since then. And I don't know the details now, but I've heard things here and there. Now, apparently, you see, at other universities, where they're not forced into this double setup, where the university has its own research office that actually collects all of it, that money just goes to the university. It uses it for anything it wants. In those days, none of the money came to the campus at first, until finally they gave some of the money for local people administrating research, research grants. That is, what do they call it now? The research administration office or something of that sort.
You mean Bob Schneider's?
No, there are two offices having to do with research administration. One of them does the bookkeeping, essentially. One of them worries about grants and things of this sort. I mean, the one doing the bookkeeping. They understand, were the first ones. There was a single man who was paid by Albany, by the Research Foundation.
Research and Graduate Studies, Vice Provost, that's Bob Schneider. Then there's the Research Foundation Business.
I think that's the one. And they got money enough to hire one, the university got money enough to hire one man who's really an employee of the Research Foundation. And that was it. And then gradually things changed and more money came back. And in recent years, it's my understanding that we do get free money, not merely for expenses connected with the research grant operation, but actually which can be turned over to departments for additional research funds. It's not nearly as much as private universities get with something. And in those days, we couldn't get it. Apparently, this was the policy of the central office. They wanted all that money. They used as an excuse the fact that if they gave it back to the campus, the legislators would claim that it all belonged to the state of New York and go to the Treasury. How true that was, I don't know, but apparently they found a way around it now. The main difficulty that I found was that before Stony Brook, nearly all the research money is running out for
them. Nope, not yet.
Nearly all the research money went to the medical schools. Let's see, there were three at that time, as before we had our medical school, Buffalo, upstate, and downstate.
Yes.
And they controlled policy completely. As an example, there are two extra costs one puts on to a grant. One is overhead, and one is fringe benefits. Mm-hmm. Now, on overhead, each campus is considered a separate unit, and the new campuses, because their buildings are newer and there had not been time for amortization, that is, the buildings are still valuable, the overhead costs were very, very high. On the old campuses, they were lower, but the medical schools are very low. On the other hand, when it came to fringe benefits, we were one big university. And again, we lost, because it turns out that there's a lot of graduate students who get no fringe benefits. We pay less in fringe benefits than, let's say, a medical school. And yet, we all had to be even. And every time I'd say, don't we have separate policies on fringe benefits? Oh, we're one big university. You want to be separate little campuses or something? They said, well, why don't we have one policy for amortization, for overhead? Oh, that's different. And never get proper answers. And the medical schools would benefit thereby, because they got the best in both sides. And since there was practically no research money for the campuses in the early 60s, when you compare it to the medical school, there was nothing we could do. The other beef I had there, what was it now? I've forgotten now. But it was a difficult committee assignment, and finally I resigned in protest over some impropriety. I remember what happened. It was a bad budget year federally, the federal government, and the research, the NSF, in anticipation of a big budget cut, sent out a notice saying that all the research investigators, all the principal investigators, should be very careful about their budgets, not spend anything in the early months because there might be some money taken away, if there was. This notification could not, under the federal rules, go to the campuses because the contractor, so to speak, or the granting agency, the representative was the Research Foundation. We went to the Research Foundation, they didn't tell us about it. And they said, it wasn't going to come into effect for 3-4 months. But those are just 3-4 months when you could save money and not spend half your budget and then discover you didn't have all the other half what you expected. So it was an extraordinarily badly run office. And I remained with that impression until Francis Bonner, who was actually not on the committee that I was on, but actually on the Board of Trustees or Board of Governors, whatever they call it, something like the Research Foundation, told me that it's altogether different now, completely different attitudes, much more cooperative with the individual campuses, much more recognition of what their role is. It was one of these self-contained kingdoms, operated for itself in the early years. And the trouble was, they didn't know they were doing that. Thought they were giving us service. They thought they were giving us good service, and they had absolutely no feeling for it. Anyway, that's Albany.
Okay.
As far as other off-campus activities concerned, they're mostly professional. I mean, my professional activities.
Right.
So I was editor of a series of volumes, and I was on the editorial board of...
What were the volumes?
They're called Physics and Chemistry of Organic Solids. Wiley publication. We got out three volumes, and then we're going to have a continuing running series. It was one of these volumes where people write extensive review articles of a whole subfield, and as new things develop, you ask another author, and you can get a few more, you put out another volume. And after the third volume, we just got tired and quit. In any case, a journal had come out in the field, so it was not one we really needed. And then I was on the editorial board of a journal for about 15 years or so.
What was the name of the journal?
Originally, Molecular Crystals, which was my field at the time, and later changed to Molecular Crystals and Liquid Crystals. The second half I know very little about.
Okay.
Does that cover 13?
Yes.
If I take too long on any of these,
I want to get as much as we can. What do you feel you had accomplished at Stony Brook?
I personally? You mean?
Yeah.
Well, I've gotten the graduate school started. I had helped out to some extent in the department. I was beginning to get back into my field of research.
Did you bring in any people? Were you responsible for recruiting anybody that you can remember?
No, I don't think so. The reason was the following. You see, the people who really look for other vitamins to bring in are, of course, the people in the individual fields. So if the nuclear physicists want to bring in somebody, they get together and think of something. I was a solid-state physicist, but I was in a rather odd area of solid-state. Odd, not really odd, that's not the right word. It was an area in which there were many more chemists than physicists. And even if there had been a physicist, I didn't think it was appropriate to bring it into the department. The department needs were different. I mean, the more physics, solid-state physics, was important to build up. David Hanson, with whom I've collaborated, I've written some articles, does this sort of thing in chemistry. It could very well be in the physics department, but it's just that the nature of the subject is such as to attract chemists. This molecular crystals field, where originally they got into the field because they thought it's a good way to study molecules. And then they learned that they had to understand the solid-state properties in order to understand what they were seeing. And so some of them actually became what, up to that time, they were called solid-state physicists. You know, they were chemical physicists, essentially. And then also, what is his name? Japanese, I know it well, it's so long ago. Hirota. Professor Hirota was here until he went back for many years. In fact, we all thought he was going to stay here, but his apparently he and his wife felt that their children were not getting a proper Japanese education, and he was offered a full professorship at Kyoto. So he went. So the three of us be involved with each other. And so, anyway, that's other stuff. But I've answered the question, I think, that I was not, the people I knew, I would not have brought into the department. They're first of all mainly chemists, and so couldn't teach some of the advanced courses in physics, although they knew a good deal of physics. And also not appropriate for the department. Okay.
Well, let's see.
Get my glasses back on.
Did things that were important for the future development of the university as a whole, or some part of it.
I think I've done that, haven't I?
I think so. Do you want to comment about John Toole?
Yeah, I think that John came here at the right time for developing a size that might not have otherwise been developed. I think, as you know, John antagonized some people even more than Alec did, and at a certain point, I think it was, in a way, good for the university that he left. And this is not meant as a criticism, John.
No.
What I mean is, he has talents. He has great talents, which were very vital to the university at that time. But they were, he was a builder.
He was a builder.
But after the peak of use of those talents of his had passed, the other aspects of his antagonizing portion of the faculty, I think, negated some of his other...
What portion of the faculty did
I think most of the people in the social sciences and the humanities, not most, but in the humanities certainly, but a lot of people in the social sciences. And I say this because, even though I'm very fond of John, and strongly, I'm extremely glad he was here.
Yeah. Right.
That seems to be the end, huh?
Well, that's the end of the question. Anything else for the good of the order?
I can't think of anything. If I do, I'll just jot down a few notes and send it to you.
Do you have any papers, any files?
I do, but it's going to take me some time to sort out things. I'm going to wait until the Christmas vacation, if that's okay.
And let Edward Folkers have them.
Who?
We have a university archives.
Oh.
On the second floor here of the library.
Yeah.
It's called Special Collections. And it's, the man's name is Edward Folkers.
I see that print, I'll remember it.
Well, wait a minute. He is there.
Oh, okay.
If you want to read this, it's an appeal, this whole thing is an appeal for files and recollections.
Yeah.
And some people have sent in their files.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to keep anything that is significant,
personal thing,
send a copy. Sure. Copy.
I think I'd better consult him. He's got a lot of junk, you see, and I'm not sure he. I know that librarians, for example, one of their the banes of their existence, that people think they're doing some good and giving all their old books, which, you know, duplicate things they have and so forth.
Right.
So I think maybe I'll just indicate to him what I have and see what he wants.
Okay. Well, while you're here, you might just as well go down to the second floor. What time is it?
Do I have to actually have, 3:13. I have to get back to the department now.
Well, I would be glad to go down with you and simply introduce you so that you know where it is and you know who he is.
Well, I can't spend time there.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
I'll go with you.
Thank you. All right. You want to turn that off?
Yeah.